War is one of humanity's absurdities. So how can it be presented to children in a way that makes sense? Human conflict and the reasons we enter into it are difficult enough for adults to understand. Up through the Second World War, arguably the last war that made any kind of sense, children's literature has had a patriotic slant, focusing on glory and heroism and downplaying the mindlessness of it all. But that is changing. Jill Dahlman will be talking about the way children's literature portrays war at Children's Literature Hawaii's 17th Biennial Conference, and she joins us this morning. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Did the way war is portrayed for children change after the Second World War? Was that a turning point?
Yes, I believe it was. When we were talking about the golden age of comics, which is when children's comics really were for children, up to this point, I mean, even today when we hear the word comic book, we don't necessarily think of them as adult literature.
Mm-hmm.
However, that was because of its background, and it is arguably more for adults today than it is for children, unfortunately. But back in the golden age, it truly was for children, and there it was. There was more of a concentration on what could children do to help out the war effort, aside from something as simple as recycling. So heroes like Captain America came into play, and Captain America's creators developed the Sentinels of Liberty, where the children would go ahead and look for spies or look for unusual activity, and they actually were quite successful at doing it. And then now the representation isn't quite there in terms of a patriotic slant. When you take a look at authors such as Linda Sue Park, when she writes her books, When My Name Was Kyoko, for example, she talks about the Japanese occupation of Korea and what had happened in one child's experience. And obviously, Linda Sue Park went through a tremendous amount of research in order to go ahead and be able to write, not just in a child's voice, but to write accurately and with facts properly presented.
Well, Jill, that's an enormous coming of age from Sergeant Rock and Black Hawk Rangers and Everybody Who Goes to War as a Hero, right?
That's correct. And nobody ever got hurt over there. Nobody ever died.
Yeah.
Nothing bad ever happened.
Right.
And the superheroes were there to save us, to make certain that we would be victorious. There are no superheroes in today's novels. Arguably one of the best graphic novels, A Mouse, which was written by Art Spiegelman and won a Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah.
Spiegelman's representation of what happened during the Holocaust, which is both simultaneously an autobiography of himself and a biography of his father's experience in the concentration camps, does not sugarcoat anything. It was a day that it demonstrates the day-to-day struggle to stay alive. And this is actually used anywhere from sixth grade curriculum up until college curriculum.
That was a huge turning point in the so-called, that's when we stopped calling them comic books and started calling them graphic novels in a big way.
That's when graphic novels actually were honored as an accepted form of literary genre.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it took a little bit of work in order to get that far. But in the late 60s, early 70s, they started calling it graphic novel. And so that's when it really started to turn around, and that's when the graphic novel actually became more for an adult audience than it did for a children's audience.
Well, Jill, the late 60s and early 70s, as far as war is concerned and our perception of it is concerned, were kind of the death of illusion, in a sense. So that's Vietnam era. It was pretty hard to hang on to heroic illusions after Vietnam, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And Captain America even demonstrated that. Captain America did not participate in the Vietnam War, which to me speaks volumes. If this is America's best superhero that we've got, and he's not going to war, he's tackling home front problems, that to me suggests that it's not necessarily an anti-war statement, but it certainly is not a pro-war statement. And this is at a time when it's my president, good or bad, and you accept my president. You know, they don't really, they're not flawless, but by the same token, you don't point out their flaws. Right? So.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Captain America also had I'm not sure how to call it. He went ahead and discovered Watergate in one of the graphic novels, and one of the representations was that he realized that his country was not the country he had been fighting for all these years, and so he just pretty much took off to find the real America on a motorcycle.
So that was a Watergate era Marvel comic where they brought Watergate into the subject matter.
They did, but they didn't. They just changed the names ever so slightly, but you knew who they were talking about. And then when the curtain is revealed, when the curtain is drawn back, and you see the figure of the president there, it looks oddly enough like Richard Nixon.
Well, he was a bit of a cartoon villain even without the cartoons, but
yeah, he had that kind of face.
But you know, the Second World War certainly seems cut and dried heroes and villains in ways that subsequent wars have not. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And especially going back to that golden age again, the golden age of comics, the enemy was represented in very animalistic views. I mean, the way that they drew the enemy, the Japanese had fangs,
yeah.
And their skin was not exactly a normal color. It was more of a funky green.
Yeah.
Anything to demonize the enemy, to make the enemy the other, so that it would be easier to kill. It's easy to kill something that's a demon and scary looking, but when it looks like your next-door neighbor, not quite so much.
That's how you send young men to war. That's the process that's gone on since the Romans, since who knows when, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. You have to. Otherwise, you're shooting your neighbor, and that doesn't make sense to people. So that's the reason why if you don't demonize them, then who is there to hate, and who is there to perpetuate that anger?
And I think in military training, the thing is to get rid of hesitation that you might have, right? So
don't think, just do.
Yeah.
Right.
But we're now seeing a lot more ambiguities are now being allowed in, Joe. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I believe so. I believe that there's more of an emphasis on the individual and not on let us exterminate a race. It's more of a, hey, wait a minute, there's some atrocities going on. We need to call attention to those atrocities in a way that children can understand. So if it's written, say, for example, if I go back to my Linda Sue Parks example of when my name was Kyoko, the child is maybe 8, 9 years old, and she sees the Japanese come in. She hears them change her name from her Korean name to a Japanese name, which is where the title of the book came from. And the child, as the child reads this book, they will experience the same thing she did, the way that they tried to get rid of the Rose of Sharon bushes because it was the Korean national bush, and what her family did to hide their particular Rose of Sharon bush, which was her mother's pride and joy.
Well, Jill, it's amazing that medium can take on something so complex, but I appreciate getting the chance to talk to you this morning.
So please feel free to come out and see some of the other amazing authors and illustrators at our conference on Friday and Saturday.
We'll send them your way. Jill Dahlman is a professor of literature at the University of Hawaii, Hilo. She'll be talking about children's literature and the ways it has evolved over the years this weekend at Children's Literature Hawaii's 17th Biennial Conference. It's at Chaminade University in Honolulu, and you can find out more about it at hpr2.org.